And that's where our channel partners really come into play. So we have the referral program that we do with clients where we ask them to give us introductions or to speak on our behalf. But the channel partner approach for us is proving to be really useful for getting us those inbound leads, because they can listen for and start to pull in customers who feel like they're in the right space. So yeah, that's been really interesting for us to explore.
Hi, welcome to another episode. I'm your host, Brian Maddox. With me today, Julie Williams. Julie, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
If you could give our listeners a little bit of background about how you got involved in the marketing sort of space and conversation, that'd be super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a managing partner at Karakins Group. And at Karakins Group, we really stand at the intersection of strategy and social science. We want to see organizations do really well as they lead their organizations through transformation and really work on changing the way that they're growing and they're increasing their impact in the world. And when we do that, we bring together my background in consulting and in strategy work, but also my background in social science and how we understand and think about what's happening in organizations through the lens of what we know are well-understood phenomena in behavior and in decision-making and in the processes that groups go through to come together and to align around shared goals. So that's the heart of what we do and a little bit about my background.
So the Karakins Group, when you guys are out there approaching the market space, how do you dial your behavioral sort of understanding into the marketing strategy you use to get new clients for yourself?
Yeah, it's so interesting, Brian, for us. And one of the things that is a challenge for us is nobody's out there looking for what we do, right? We really try to work with senior leaders who are interested in growing their organizations in new and different ways by aligning their leaders to deliver together. And nobody goes out onto Google and types in, how do we get our team aligned to deliver together? If they did, right, I hope they would find Karakins Group. I should try that. But they're not doing that, right?
Exactly.
They might be looking for leadership development. They might look for team building, or they might look for strategy work, because we do a lot of work in strategy as well. But they're not looking for that idea of how do I get my team aligned to deliver together. And so we have to really think about what is it that would help people to understand what we do and why they need it. And I think for us, that as a B2B company, that's one of our big challenges in marketing. And it's what makes our work sometimes hard to market, quite frankly.
So do you guys have a kind of a set of behavior chaining that you expect that they're going to go from that early education phase where they don't even know what they're typing into Google, all the way up to and through the even getting to leadership development? For a lot of folks is a really from I have no idea to I think I need leadership development. How, yeah, what does that kind of behavior chain look like? How do you know you're getting folks to move along?
Yeah. So when we are talking with people about the work that we do and we're trying to, you know, be out there marketing Karakins Group, we really lean into the challenges that senior leaders face, which is very few of them are actually too interested in leadership development, right? They kind of did that in the mid-level of their career. And that's not actually what we do either. We have a leadership development offering for those mid-level leaders, but the senior level leaders that we're really focused on, we ask them to think about some of the challenges that they're experiencing. For example, we know that organizations don't change, leaders do. And so I'm always telling executives, if you're not changing how you lead, you're not transforming your organization. And that's a very confronting idea for them, right? The idea that if I'm not changing how I lead, I'm not transforming my organization. They love to get other people to do things differently, but they don't really love to do things differently themselves. So getting them into that headspace in our marketing messaging is really the first step for us in getting them interested in thinking about what would it mean for me to have to change. And right, that's not the easiest thing to market to people, right?
It's funny though. I mean, from what I'm hearing, right? So to translate this perhaps into, I guess, sort of more of a mid-market conversation, you're still focusing on the pain, right?
Yeah.
You're still focusing on here is the problem. The challenge that I would have in that context though is, you know, are these senior leaders still typing the language of their pain into Google? Right? Is that conversation still happening, or are they now so many levels removed from that that they just hire somebody to make it go away? So how do you kind of reconcile that?
Yeah, it is a really, I mean, I won't lie to you, there's no silver bullet, right? It is a tough one for us. How do we get leaders to understand that they need our services? And one of the things that we've worked with, and I'm sure that some of your listeners have as well, is we lean into things like referral programs or referral ideas where we get other people to speak about their experiences with us to help close the gap between what we do and what people think they need. Because for us, that's a pretty big gap. So we've got to bridge that somehow. And the most effective bridge for us often is the voices of people who have worked with us. Or in a separate construct of referrals, referral partners who know us and know how our work fits in with what they do, which might be more traditional and more straightforward.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you get that a lot. I mean, social proof in many ways, right? So it's quite the same thing as the Amazon reviews, but it's very much a more, I guess, because it's a more complicated sale, a more... a different way to engage. So when you are getting those white papers and case studies and that kind of approach together, how are you cultivating the relationships there, right? Because more often than not, you're going to want to introduce folks to corresponding peers, and you're going to want to curate that conversation to a degree. How do you set those up?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that happen that are really interesting for us in the client referral space. So for a client who's worked with us and we say, hey, would you mind being a referral for us for this prospect? What we'll often do is act a little as the intermediary. So we'll set up maybe a 30-minute call, which, by the way, sometimes people just default to the hour-long call. Two strangers who are talking about you don't have that much to talk about, so don't make it harder than it has to be, right? Even 15 minutes or 20 minutes is a great duration. So just from a purely tactical perspective, if people are thinking about how do I get someone to be a referral for me, don't ask for too much of their time, right? You don't need it, because that social proof happens very quickly. It happens within the first 5 or 10 minutes that the person who is getting the referral is deciding whether or not they trust in this person and they trust that the information being shared is valid. So you don't need an hour. So we look for that little slot of time that we can get with them to get the two of them together. And then we generally host the conversation, at least for the first few minutes, to make introductions, to say, you know, here's the work that we did, here's the work we're thinking about doing, and connect the dots. At that point, sometimes it can be really helpful to drop off and let the two of them have a conversation just between them. I would suggest that that depends a little bit on how much you trust and understand the person who's giving the referral, right? Like, we have some people who are deep in with us and we know that they're going to say the right things and that, you know, they're going to help guide the conversation properly. If it's somebody who's maybe a little less familiar or has maybe just done one project with us or hasn't known us too long, we might stay on that call for the whole time. So I think what I would suggest to your listeners is, if you're trying to curate that conversation, really think about how long you're asking the two to interact, how you're hosting the conversation versus directing or driving it, and whether or not you want to drop off and let them have a conversation just between the two of them.
So in this setup meeting, and this is something that we've done for referrals as well, I think these are great for managing some of those initial conversations. And I think the other part, though, is that I guess I want to get to is for the larger contracts where you're going to want to see people kind of in the weeds of what they're doing. As that referral relationship matures or as that conversation matures, what does that look like as a next step?
You do mean getting the conversation going, or
yeah? So let's say they've started a conversation. You've got that referral kind of in the mix, but they want to learn more, or they want to get even kind of more into the weeds. How do you cultivate that? What does that look like?
Yeah. So that actually for us would shift out of the referral process pretty quickly and more into what we would call experiential marketing, right? Giving them an experience with us that gives them a taste of what it's like to work with us. And that's actually been a really powerful marketing tool for us as well. Because once people have the opportunity to work with us and to hear what we have to say, and also to see what it's like to be in a meeting with us or be in an experience with us, then things actually move pretty quickly from a sales perspective. So the marketing process of getting someone through a referral conversation generally opens the door for us to get more into that experiential marketing. We call it a give to get, which our good friend Mo Bunnell is a term that he coined. But when we think about that give to get idea, how can we give them something that gets us in the door?
Gotcha. There's lots of, I think, stuff to unpack there for the direct to market conversation. Then, you know, clearly the referral, once that's matured to a certain point, you may or may not do that. But for those direct to market conversations where you've got that maybe a give to get model, what does that look like for the business and how does that work?
So when we don't operate at scale, so we don't have that challenge, right? We're not trying to get 100 new customers in the door, or, you know, even 50 new customers in the door, right, every year. So for us, our business is pretty selective in terms of who we work with and how long we work with them. So we're usually looking to onboard around 10 to 15 new customers a year. So I think that helps us just from a volume perspective to be able to manage that process.
So you don't have to worry about that at scale. That's interesting. Yeah. So when it comes to, if we can go back to the earlier in the journey for your prospects, how are you identifying what your kind of that early interest looks like, and how are you cultivating folks from that early interest phase to this slightly kind of deeper? What does that funnel look like? What are the indicators that someone's moved past the, you know, the early stuff and into the kind of middle of it? How have you figured that out?
Yeah. For us, an ideal customer often is somebody who's in a new enterprise level leadership role. So it might be a new CEO or COO or a regional president or somebody in that space who's looking to really coalesce the team around shared objectives. And so in that first 18 months or so, in that leadership role is often a great time for us to engage. And guess what? It's also a really busy time for that person, right? So trying to slot in from a marketing perspective and even get that time can be challenging. And that's where sometimes introductions can help us. So, you know, having somebody say, you should do this work now is really helpful. But also giving them some tools and resources that they can quickly use themselves, I find prompts them to come back and want more. Right. So again, it's that idea of giving them something that's really useful and tangible that they can put into play right away. And then they say, okay, I get it. I see the value of this. How can you help me build a strategy that will let me stand kind of apart and set apart this group? Or how can you help me with the growth strategies that we have in place that we need to accelerate? So that's one space, is that new executive that we look for, where even though they're really busy and they're trying to, you know, do a lot of stuff, getting them to really focus on how their team is working together to deliver on their growth strategies is really important to set them up for success.
So that's outbound, right? So you're out there actively looking for folks in that space and then reaching out. Yeah. On the inbound side, though, I mean, do you have a way to track who's kind of circling the bait, as it were, or ready to go through that conversation?
Yeah. So inbound is tricky for us. Again, people aren't necessarily looking for the work that we do. And that's where our channel partners really come into play. So we have the referral program that we do with clients where we ask them to give us introductions or to speak on our behalf. But the channel partner approach for us is proving to be really useful for getting us those inbound leads, because they can listen for and start to pull in customers who feel like they're in the right space. Yeah. So that's been really interesting for us to explore.
I love it. So how are you training your channel partners?
Yeah. So again, small company, right? Which I think probably some of your listeners are in the same boat. So we're not trying to get them to flood us with referrals. We're trying to get the right referrals in the door. And so part of it is having the conversations with them about the work that we do, getting them into our language. We've invited a few of them to do some of our programs so that they can hear it for themselves and experience it for themselves. We'll go and do the same give to gets with them that we would do with a potential client. So they have that firsthand experience and they can speak to it. And so it's really treating them as, you know, how can we onboard them in the same way that we might onboard a client? So they really can help us to spot and identify those clients who could really benefit from our services.
I love it. So how, and now the questions are going to get really interesting. How did you identify the channel partners that you wanted to add to your mix?
Yeah. So we're really fortunate. My business partner, Bruce Siegel, and I have been in consulting for 30 plus years each. And so we have pretty good networks ourselves. And so we reached out to people who we know and trust and who we really respect in the market, who are doing the kind of work that we think our work dovetails with very nicely. That was the first place we went. And I would encourage anyone who's developing a channel partner construct, especially in B2B, and if your services are fairly nuanced, start with people you trust, right? And explore that with them as effectively as possible. The other thing that we've done is looked at where we know our work fits really well. So I talked about the new leader, someone who's fairly new to a leadership role. We also know that our work fits really well with transformation efforts, whether it's digital transformation, ERP implementation, organizational redesign, whatever that might look like. And there are systems integrators or change management partners or different kinds of companies that really specialize in those kinds of transformations. So our work is a little different from that, and we can help those channel partners to be even more successful in the work that they're doing with their clients. So we look for those types of opportunities as well. So for us, those are the two spaces that we have focused on.
So when you're out there and you are trying to grow the channel partner conversation, when you're actively looking to add channel partners, is that something that you have as part of your roadmap? How many do you add per year? What does that look like?
Yeah. So again, given our size in terms of mid-market and small, we're not looking for a channel partners to start flooding us with opportunities because we just couldn't manage it. So would ideally love to have, I would say, between 6 to 10 active channel partners who are pulling us through into conversations, you know, directionally from the channel partner program a few times a month. And that gives us the level of volume that is appropriate for our business. Excuse me. But I think that if you're looking to have a larger ecosystem of channel partners, it's really important to manage that ecosystem the same way that you manage leads or your own direct-to-market clients. So we, for example, my colleague Bruce, again, has done a great job of organizing our channel partners in HubSpot so that we can use it as a tool to really manage our relationships with them as effectively as possible, rather than just having this somewhat haphazard approach to the ecosystem where we think, oh, well, you know, Joe over there is doing a lot of systems integration work and Sue over there is doing a lot of transformation work. So let's ask them if they'll do referrals for us, right? Like I think that's where a lot of people are, and getting more rigor around it and treating it like an ecosystem that has to be managed, I think has really helped us to accelerate our ability to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think I completely concur with you on the strategic side of the conversation. Having a plan, knowing what that looks like and executing it is something that should not be left to like to whim, right? Otherwise, you don't have control over your BD channel. So when you talk to this, though, are you evaluating channel partner performance against the business growth goals? And what does that look like?
Full disclosure, I would say we aren't that sophisticated yet in the space. We're really growing it right now. We're in the midst of our own growing pains around it. And so I would share with your audience as well, like this takes hard work and it takes time. So we started building out the channel partner ecosystem about a year ago, I would say. We got really diligent around it around 6 months ago, and we're just now starting to see the benefit of that and starting to see more regular opportunities coming in through those channel partners. So it's not a faucet that you just turn on and off, right? You have to really feed it and nurture it, and that's where we are. So we don't yet have the challenge of how do we manage the leads that are coming in. We're still trying to grow those leads. Gotcha. And I think that means that right now we can be pretty selective in that space and try and make sure that we're vetting the leads that are coming in against our ideal customer profiles. The channel partners themselves have just been amazing, right? In terms of asking great questions and really wanting to genuinely understand how they can bring us along. And I think that matters as well. That's like a worthy evaluation process for people who you might be investing time and energy in. Because look, if you're a smaller mid-sized business, you know, you're time constrained, right? Like, how do you engage channel partners in a way that helps them to be successful and helps you to be successful? But you don't want to spend a lot of time nurturing a relationship that's not going to benefit either one of you. So you have to be able to cut that pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. As you guys cook this up a little bit further, I definitely want to come back and have a deeper conversation about it. Julie, I want to thank you for being on the show. I have a couple kind of wrap-up questions here as we start to hit the time. The first is, who should reach out to you and how can they get a hold of you should they need what Karrigan's Group has to offer?
Yeah, I love that question. Thank you. And I would say anyone who is a leader in an organization who is struggling with enterprise level growth goals or transformation efforts and knows that the problem is not with the rest of the organization, the problem is with the leadership team. How do we get the leadership team to fully engage on the strategic goals, the transformation effort, the change that's afoot in the organization so that they can accelerate and really drive that transformation as effectively as possible? That's our sweet spot. We do a lot of other work too, but that's where we really shine, is if you feel like something is kind of gummed up or decisions aren't getting made quickly enough, or you're not heading in the right direction, we can help organizations to align and deliver together.
Awesome. And the last question is, in your marketing sort of quest, what are the three biggest things you've learned so far?
I would say, first and foremost, as I started out, organizations don't change, leaders do. And from a social science perspective, figuring out how to unlock the leadership potential and marketing to that pain has been one of the biggest lessons for us as we've tried to market our services and create the impact that we know that we can have in lots of different kinds of organizations. So speaking to that pain and making it felt has been a big learning curve for us. I think the second thing for us is that in that partnership space, it's really important that your partners know and understand who you are culturally as well as practically, because you want a good fit with channel partners where it won't feel to a client like they're going, you know, to a completely different world when they're working with you or working with one of your partners. We pull our partners through in the work that we do too. So the channel partnership is reciprocal and we want it to feel coherent to our customers. So that's been a good lesson learned as well. And then the third thing I would say is at the end of the day, we all want, you know, less pain and more reward. And so the more that we can create that in our marketing processes, the more successful we've been.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Julie, for being on the show today. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you. Yes, you. It's 2024 and you don't have a podcast yet. Or maybe you do, but you're struggling with it. We will talk to you about that for free. We'll help you figure out where you might be stuck, whether or not we can help you for sure. But also, if you don't have one yet, what are the first five things you can do? What are some great angles that you can use to make sure that your podcast was sustainable as you start to develop that moving forward? Those consults are free. So reach out at the link below in the show notes or email me at brian@podcastchef.com. Thanks.
Hi, this is Brian. Thanks for listening to the show. Our website, podcastchef.com, has a ton of useful information about how to best leverage podcasting to help you solve some of your business goals and challenges. You can also schedule a demo where we can show you how specifically Podcast Chef and our team can help you with some of your podcasting goals. Thanks.